This episode of the A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
It's the famous people of the Pro Tour, like the people who've influenced and who, you know, that's what I think the Hall of Fame is. Like, if you look at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's not all people who sold platinum albums. There's producers and shit in there too, you know? Like, Makes sense.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team. KYT.
Sorry, Jay just agreed with Medina. My head exploded.
Jay Boosh.
Is this what it's like to be a brewer? Because that was exciting.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. I take it all back.
Scotty.
I would really like you to, like, come clean. You just mulligan to land, elf sword every single game.
And Medina.
So anyways, I had to leave, obviously, because I'm just not going to sit here and watch chicks get naked when there's training to be done.
And now, the A-Team.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 137 of the A-Team Podcast. Mr. Scotty Mack here, joined by two of my most amazing bro co-hosts. I have, of course, the one, the only, Mr. Jonathan Medina. Say hello, Jonathan.
Hey, I'm a bro host. How's it going, guys?
All right. And of course, the silent chuckle in the background, we've got none other than Batman himself, KYT.
What's up?
My God!
He sounds pumped.
What the fuck?
I'm trying. Gotta make up for a lack of Janus here.
Yeah, we do.
So on that note, there's a significant lack of Janus. You'll notice that Jay this week will not be here, so if you would like to tune out now and come back next week, I don't blame you. You may turn it off now.
No, that's bullshit. If you turn this off, you're not a real A-Team fan, all right? That's all I gotta say.
That's true. Although our A-Team fans will certainly find something to complain about. We love you.
Yeah, you bunch of complainers.
So, anyways, lots of stuff happened this week. There was a GP, which is crazy. KYT ended up playing in another PTQ, and so he's going to tell us all about that. I had, like, the most amazing stream ever. I think John played some EDH?
Yeah, I guess I played EDH, like... I mean, we'll talk about it later, right? Or now,
yeah,
or whatever.
No, later. We're going to get into something else first that the listeners, not the viewers, that one's for you, they all had a lot to say this week. And we should make sure that we address everything that the listeners said.
Really? Oh, man, what did they say?
So, there were 36 comments this week. I don't know how many of them there actually are if you kind of, like, take out the fight between, you know, David Mantle and everyone.
I think Mantle, like, drank a bottle of whiskey and just, like, went to town on our comments.
I think so, too.
This guy was, like, he was out of control, man. He was out of control.
He certainly had a lot to say. Also, but, I mean, if we're going to talk about somebody that has a lot to say, like, Ultra Tribes, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, he... You know, it was kind of annoying, though, I gotta admit, all right? Because I always look at, and this, I need to get this answered once and for all, okay, KYT? Do you have to approve the comments on the site?
I don't.
Okay, because what it always seems like is it always seems like there's, like, zero comments, and then, like, in an instant, there'll be, like, four or five comments, like, extra. Like, somebody's approving them, it almost feels like. and so, like, what happens is I check, and there's, like, one comment, right?
Right.
And I'm like, man, people got to hurry up. I always check comments, by the way. I'm like, people got to hurry up and, like, you know, listen to the show so I can hear what they have to say. And then there's, like, nine comments. And I'm like, oh, man, nine comments. This is sick. There's going to be, like, different opinions. Maybe KYT approved the comments, you know? So then I go and look, and this dude, like, doesn't know how to put in one comment. He's just, like, nailing all this. It's, like, eight comments from this guy. And so it really annoyed me.
It's like taking the cue from Shaolin Monk, who was basically doing live commenting, and he's basically doing the same thing. And I seem to be like, our show seems to be attracting these type of peoples who love to do that.
I mean, I guess you can't complain. Like, some people would kill for a comment on their podcast. Like, maybe the guys at Horde of Notions or something. But, you know, we get lots of comments. So we want quality comments. Like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you're a rock star, you want quality, right? That's what we want. You know, we want quality. Not to say that this guy's comments weren't quality. I'm just saying I was a little annoyed because I got excited. I thought we had eight more comments. They were all from him. Anyways, proceed.
So we just wanted to make sure that you all knew that we love your comments.
Mm-hmm. We definitely.
Yeah, that's why I'm like refreshing my screen all day on Monday. I'm like, come on, guys, tell me something.
So yeah, Ultra Tribes was great. Don't ever stop. Don't change, despite what John says. Just continue to send a million comments. I love the fact that Smitty can't stay away. I love the fact that he can't stay away. Chapin, so he makes a comment to say that, you know, to compare, you know, himself to Flores, you know, and saying that they're like, you know, better than Chapin. And I think it's awesome that Smitty's out there and just like, we get bagged on and standing up for himself. And I think it's great. And then, you know, he defends himself also in all the shit that he takes. So I'm actually glad to see him, you know, still around.
Can you just read his comment? What did he say about Chapin?
So I'll read his comment. It says Chapin is incredible. This is Smitty's comment. I'm just reading it. This is his opinion.
This opinion does not reflect the opinion of the A-Team podcast.
You forgot to say does not necessarily reflect. So Smitty's quote is, Chapin is incredibly overrated as a deck builder / player. He's mediocre. Flores and myself have had more successful decks in the last couple of years, and we get bagged on hard. So Mantle just laughs, and Smitty, of course, says, you laugh, but it's 100% true. He's a beloved article writer and solid player, but not great at anything but the writing. Seriously, compare what me and Flores' decks have done in the last 3 years compared to Chapin. If you put in that time, you'd have factual results. By the way, Mantle, how is being a masochist and continuing to get slayed in tournaments going? Just saying.
So, terrible.
So wait a second. So basically he's saying he's better than Chapin at deck building.
If you follow the results that he's mentioning in that specific
Spot. That's what he's like. Let's not sugarcoat it, right? That's what he's saying, right? He and Flores. He puts himself in the category with Mike Flores, who should be in the Pro Tour Hall of Fame, by the way. So he puts himself in that category and says that he is a better deck builder, right? Than Patrick Chapin.
I mean, like the art, it's right there. You can read it and understand it however you want.
In the last 3 years, I think.
In the last 3 years.
Specifically, yeah.
So you agree, right? KYT, that's what he's saying. That in the last 3 years.
Right. He's been more successful at creating like good decks. And I don't know if I...
Whoa!
I remember that he was one of the first to make the rug... like he liked to call it... what did he like? Grr. G-U-R.
Yeah.
That Michael Jacob like popularized like the same week or shortly after. So Chapin has in the last year, like the last 2 years, he's been really just playing decks that he enjoys, right? Like he's playing Grixis because he enjoys, I feel, not because it's the best deck.
Yeah.
So he's been doing a lot of that. So I don't know, maybe. And you know, some people can argue that Chapin hasn't been innovating, like just playing decks that are more his style, more so than decks that are meant to perform super well. But I'd still pick Chapin over Jesse any day. Bottom line.
So yeah, I don't know, man. I feel like didn't Chapin have some Pro Tour success with one of his decks? Am I off base here?
I mean, he did really well at Pro Tour Paris with working with Guillaume Massignol and Guillaume Wafutapa, you know, at Pro Tour Paris.
Yeah.
the Tezzeret deck that, yeah, that's the one deck that that keeps coming to mind when I think of Chapin in the last 3 years.
And I mean, like, and five color control, basically, you know, is from the year before that. So, like, the last 3 years are still, yeah.
And he probably plays a strong hand in some of the SCG decks that, you know, I'm just not putting his name on top of, right? So, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I'd still put him ahead of Jesse, but,
you know, like,
Jesse has some merit. That's all I'm saying.
No, so, I don't even know if I want to give Jesse any merit on this. And the reason why is because, like, I get the feeling, like, if we look at Patrick Chapin's last, like, deck article for, like, the last set that was going to come out, then I bet you he pegged, like, a lot of, like, top-tier, like, strategies. Like, I haven't even read it. I'm almost willing to say blind that if we go to his last article, we're going to see, like, a bunch of the top-tier strategies. But I could be wrong. I'm actually going to pull it up right now. I'm gonna pull up his last from the last set that got released, his last deck article. Because every set that gets released, he does that deck article, which is like, oh, all these decks could see this, like, iteration of play, you know?
Maybe it's also because, like, Standard hasn't changed that much for a long time now. At least that's my feeling. So, you know, it could be that he had nothing just because, you know, the same Hexproof, Reanimator. I mean, Naya saw a resurgence with Willie doing really well at that GP that escapes my mind right now, the name of it. But
Guadalajara.
Right. He finished second and then posted an article, and then a lot of people started to jump on that bandwagon. So, and because of the printing of Voice of Resurgence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but other than that, I don't think there's been, like, this hot new deck that I can think of. There's a green black Desecration Demon deck that I've mentioned many episodes ago. I don't know who created that deck, but that saw some success and won actually the PTQ that I played at this past weekend.
Really?
Yeah, but I don't know of, can't think of, like, super innovations.
Can we say that Desecration Demon is a bad card still, or do we have to actually call it a good card?
It's a role player in a specific deck.
It's really good in that deck.
It's absurdly good in that deck.
Okay, why is it super good in that deck? Because you just kill everything?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's all of a sudden, like, it plays the most, it's a rock deck, right? So it plays, like, the most grindy attrition game ever possible in life. And then it's like mutilates and infinite removal and sacrifice effects, and then it's playing, like, these absurdly resilient creatures like Thragtusk and Geralt's Messenger. And so, like, once you finally, like, run yourself out, oh, and sometimes it, like, even gets really fancy with the Disciple of Bolas.
Right, right.
So, like, by the time you're actually just like, fuck, can't you just die? Oh, okay, I finally stabilized. And then they go, sweet, Desecration Demon, like, Abyss of Gaia return, or I'm bashing you in the face for six. Like, God! It's just, it's obnoxious.
Okay.
Deck's very hard to play against if you are trying to win fairly with creatures.
Yeah.
So, like, one of the things is that I've seen that in this Chapin article, I mean, yeah, maybe he didn't, like, make a new archetype, but he was, like, putting Sire of Insanity in Jund before it was a thing, when Sire of Insanity was a preview card, and that's become the new iteration, right?
Right, right.
Well, it was, yeah.
Yeah, it did become.
What else is he doing here? The blue black red deck, he's added Aetherling, which is not a thing right now, I don't think, in blue black or blue white red. I don't know, man. This would take a little more research. I don't want to make the listeners, as one of the persons in our comment said, I don't want to be a bunch of tards looking up deck lists while you guys are listening to Dead Air or whatever that guy said.
Right.
I mean, it's real easy, bro. All you have to do is hit the stop button if you don't like it. You know what I mean? Just hit the stop button, bro. Go to MTGcast, download something else, man. That's totally cool. You can do that instead of bitch about it in our comments.
Oh, man. John's lashing out.
Oh, man. So anyways, yeah, I don't think Smitty's comment holds any credence. I think it's bull.
Hey, try to give him a bit of credit, okay? Let's try to give him a bit of credit. And
I mean, he doesn't forget where he came from either. So, I mean, that's a thing, right? Mm. You got to give him that credit at least.
Millblade, man. That deck was the shit. Tezzeret the Mind Hammer. You had the best names. Any other comments that you wanted to talk about, Scott?
I'd like to talk about Jay's wedding stuff, but he's not here, so that's really not fine. Mm-hmm. I think that's it. Spam Trash had a lot to say. Spencer, I think, yeah. So Spencer, the Booze Cube champion, was pretty sweet. So Flores has definitely helped the game. He's not the kind of player to make this current Hall of Fame structure. With 26 pro points, it doesn't come close. But maybe one day if we start to include people who have major contributions to our wonderful game, he could make it. So
yeah, like, the thing is like, he's like, he doesn't belong among the, I don't know if he said that, but somebody said he doesn't belong among the elite players, right? But to me, it's like, the Hall of Fame is the Hall of Fame. Yeah. It's not the Hall of Skill. It's a Hall of Fame. It's the famous people of our game, you know?
Yeah.
It's the famous people of the Pro Tour, like the people who've influenced and who've, you know, that's what I think the Hall of Fame is. Like, if you look at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's not all people who sold platinum albums. There's producers and shit in there, too, you know? Like, makes come sense. On.
Yeah. I just think it's, for me, it's always been hard to, like, that's what I'm having a hard time with my ballot, is just figuring out what the Hall of Fame means to me. And that's something I've struggled with, because, like, you can say all these contributions, but then, you know, why are they making it the 100-point barrier and raising it up for next year to 150? You know, Flores is going to be hard-pressed to ever make that cut. So what are they making? And then some people say, because it's called the Pro Tour Hall of Fame, a lot of people like to emphasize the Pro Tour part of it and say that, you know, this guy has to have performed, like, excellently at least one PT or something. That's how they see. And so with everybody, like, seeing it differently, it's really and me not even knowing how to approach the vote outside of, like, the Sherlocks, like LSV and Huey, it's actually pretty hard.
Hmm. So how do you see it?
I'm heavily influenced by sports. So it's just people that have been very special. Like, players that make it to the Hall are not necessarily people who have won championships. They're just someone that exhibited something really, really special about them. And like, to me, let's say, like, Mike has made a very, very special impact on the game, more so than a lot of people. And to me, like, he would be deserving of that honor, and has been the chief architect of a few of the more big name decks in the
game. I mean, look
at
Napster.
Nia Lightsaber.
Well, I mean, Nia Lightsaber is probably, like, his most recent amazing. Yeah, right?
But I like to do the Napster thing. Just to give a jab. I'm going to give you a jab, Flores, but I do want you to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. He'll be hard-pressed to make it just because, like, 150 and he doesn't travel to events.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's unlikely to make it. It's just like, you know, do influencers like BDM, do they, like, deserve to make it? And, like, I don't know how many pro points he has, probably less than Mike, so.
Yeah. I mean, they don't give out pro points for going to states, so Flores is never going to, you
know. So, yeah, and that's tough. So, and then, like, they do – so it conflicts me because then they do – they talked about – I don't know Bram that well, Snapbangers, but he got in, from my understanding, a large part of it was, like, building the Dutch community or making it as big as it is now. And, like, Chapin got a lot for, like, his articles and his contributions. And it's like, how much are we actually valuing this part, you know, of their contribution to in the whole equation? And, you know, that confuses me.
Yeah.
But
well, didn't he have the medium medium? He had the minimum requirements, though, didn't he? At least.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just I think a lot of people have said, like, other people have had superior stats in him, right? But they just don't have the same amount of contribution, and so they're not they're not in or are probably not going to get in because of that. So,
yeah, I feel like players who have excellence in the game are rewarded with trophies and money. All right, like. I mean, they're excellent, so they beat everyone, and then they get like recognition and trophies and money. What about the rest of the people, like Flores, you know? Like, he's famous, man. He should be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know, man. I don't want to get into it too much. Yeah. I want the listeners to, you know, leave a comment.
Our listeners hate Flores, so I don't know.
They can leave a comment about the Hall of Fame and what they think it should be.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that'd be good.
Sweetness.
All right, so that was our comments. There was a GP that happened this week. It was Modern. It was won by Seth Manfield with Malirapod. It was in Kansas City.
Is the last time we played this for... I can only speak for myself, actually. When we were like all three together in the same... like. GP.
I played some FNMs afterwards, but otherwise, yeah.
I play this format pretty regularly.
Ooh, okay, my bad.
You know, just letting you know, bro. I play this format every 2 weeks, just about, because there's a local shop that does Modern tournaments. And so the deck that won, let me open up my squawk box here. So the deck that won was a Malirapod deck, right?
Yep.
Right.
And it looks like they've adopted Voice of Resurgence in the deck.
Yep.
Because it's sweet and you can sacrifice it and make a big dude. But I tried this deck. I tried it without voices before, back in the day. And man, this deck is really hard to play. Have you guys tried this deck?
No.
No.
It's super, like, it feels like with a Kiki Pod deck, like, you could randomly win with Restoration Angels because you just play them and then, like, just start beating down with them. And sometimes you're just like, oh, got there with 3 power in the air, you know? But, like, this deck, man, like, all your dudes are little dudes. They're, like, little weenies, you know? And, like, you have to switch gears, so like, on a pin with this deck. Like, you got to get in that incremental damage, and then, whoosh, oh, I'm going to court a calling for this shit, and then I'm going to play this birthing pod, and, like, you got to, like, think of these lines, like, way in advance, because it's not like Kiki Pod, where you have to be like, all right, I need Restoration Angel, which I can flash in at the end of turn, and I need a Kiki Jiki. Like, that's it, you know? Or I need Deceiver Exarch and a Kiki Jiki. Like... it's so much easier with the other one. This one is like you need like Malira, you need a Sack Outlet, and then you need a Kitchen Finks or a Murderous Red Cap, you know? And so like to change from like the beatdown plan to like, okay, now I'm gonna make my combo in like these 3 turns or something, super tough. This deck is really hard to pilot, in my opinion. So I tried it and I couldn't get it to work, and so I stopped playing this deck.
So Ari Lax is still playing basically the straight pod version, like the Kiki Pod. So yep. he decided not to run Malira, and is instead basically on the Kiki and Conscripts, or you know Kiki Resto Conscripts. Anyways, there's a bunch of different ways to do it, right?
Yeah, yeah. The sweet thing about the Conscripts is if you expect they're going to board and combust, then you can bring the Conscripts in. And they can't combust it, which is sweet.
So what was really nice is that Ari Lax decided to play 2 copies of Dami Raid.
Yeah.
Which is pretty spicy because it adds like a versatile pseudo-removal opportunity that also allows you to draw through your deck to get more guys. So I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah, I think that's cool too. It looks like he cut down on Mana Dorks.
Still running 1 Waller Roots, 4 Noble Hierarch, and 4 Birds of Paradise. 4 Birds.
Yeah, but before I think he had also 2 like Pilgrims.
Sure. But yeah, he's on 2 Voice of Resurgence.
Obviously. He's got 2 voices now, and he's running a Tarmogoyf. Yeah, this deck looks sweet. This deck looks pretty sweet. He's still got the Staticaster in the main deck, 3 Kitchen Finks. One of the cool things is like you might want to put a Malira on the board because like Malira is just incidentally good against the Poison deck. I don't know if that's still a deck, but...
Doesn't look like it was anywhere in the top 16.
Is Affinity still there?
I believe Affinity is definitely still a... as long as... I'm just trying to find the top 16 here. So it wasn't in the top 8. We had Reanimator in the top. We had another pod. We had Twin. We had Scapeshift. We had Twin. We had Scapeshift. We had Rug. And Zoo.
Okay, so I found the day 2 metagame breakdown. So Molirapod was 15, Affinity 12, was second at 12, Scapeshift at 8, Red Green Shrine at 8, Ajundi at 8,
yeah.
Jun at 7, Kikipod at 7. So Affinity very well still. And I thought a lot of people were hyped about the whole... Oh, no, it hasn't come in yet, my bad. The whole the new legend rule with the Mox Opals, so... That's going to keep seeing play post M14.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the reason I asked about Affinity is sometimes they kill you incidentally with like Ink Moth Nexus or Blink Moth. No, Ink Moth Nexus. And Malira can be good against that. So, but it seems like these are like corner cases that don't exist right now in the meta. So it doesn't really matter. I've been playing Splinter Twin. And it seems like all the new ones are running the Snapcaster Mage version. Or the blue, white, red one.
Yeah.
And I thought the Snapcaster Mage version was shitty. Like, the Snapcaster Mages don't do anything, man. Like I like this version right here. This one has Boomerang in it, which seems sick. And then it has the Spellskite's main. But some of them have Snapcaster's main, which is like... It just isn't like... I get it. You get to rebuy stuff, but it's like... You don't give a shit about rebuying stuff. And the 2-1 body doesn't do anything because you... rarely ever get to beat down with it. You rarely ever win like with damage, you know? I mean, after sideboard, you might have to try to do that if they heat you out or whatever. But I find that most of the time I can combo them. So I like this list. I like this one with the 2 Spellskite main, 3 Blood Moon in the board. The Blood Moons are insane in this deck. And I haven't tried the Boomerang. The Boomerang seems pretty cool.
Whose list are you looking at?
I'm looking at Robert...
Bernie?
Okay, Robert. Yeah. Yeah, his looks pretty sweet. He's running 2 Desolate Lighthouse, which is... Right now I'm running 24 lands and a Desolate Lighthouse. He's running 23 lands and 2 Desolate Lighthouse. That seems like it would be hard to cast Boomerang sometimes because of that. In the spot that you need it. Also, like, I found that there could be awkward situations where getting double red for pod. Not for pod, for...
Isn't it triple red for Kiki?
Well, it's triple red for Kiki, but it's the you have more twins in your deck than you have Kikis.
Mm, true.
So you don't have double red for twins. You need triple red for Kiki, which 2 Desolate Lighthouse can get in the way. I like the Vendilion Click in the board. I run 2 Vendilion Clicks main deck in mine, and I love that. That gives you like a beatdown plan a little bit. Because I'm running Lightning Bolts still, which I'm probably just going to move to one of these versions. But like I had Lightning Bolts, Vendilion Clicks, and the rest of the creatures, so that can give me like somewhat like pretty close to a beatdown plan. I guess that's where the Snapcasters come in too, is like if you have Bolts and Snapcasters, I guess you can rebuy a Bolt or something. So I don't know. I haven't played this in 2 weeks. The GP was when? 2 weeks ago?
No, it was just this past weekend.
Oh, this past weekend, yeah. So I didn't see these results the last time I played. I'm still on the 2 Vendilion Click main and other
stuff. What's the matchup against Pod John? Is it close, favorable, unfavorable?
I think it really depends. Like it depends on like their configuration and stuff. I don't like playing against Malirapod because sometimes they run Inquisitions.
Right.
And Inquisition is a beating for the Splinter Twin deck. But like I feel like the Nyapod deck, you're just faster and they don't have a lot of interruption. And then when you bring in like Blood Moon, like I think you can bring in Blood Moon against them and it'd be pretty okay because they're running a bunch of different lands and you know it just doesn't like just like Blood Moon against Jun is another like, you know, option. So yeah, I don't think it's too bad against the Malirapod's probably tougher, but the Kiki Pod version seems good. Seems like a good matchup. I know I played against Storm with it, and I was just destroying the Storm player. Like, we played a bunch of games, like maybe like 30 games or something like that. What do I feel like is a bad matchup for it? Oh, like the blue-white control decks are really bad for it. The decks that have like Path to Exile and Cryptic Command, or Path to Exiles and like Path to Exiles and Snapcasters and like some kind of counter spells like Mana Leaks and stuff. Because then they keep you off the early, like kill them, and then they're able to just ride a path to victory, you know? A path to victory.
Switch did there.
So like the blue white like control decks, you know. That's probably the bad matchup. And then like what's the other one? The gifts deck is annoying. The gifts deck is super annoying because they can they have a bunch of discard and Liliana.
Yeah.
And then
we didn't see that at all in the top 16 either. So hopefully that deck's just on the decline.
Yeah, hopefully that deck doesn't exist anymore. But any decks with like Inquisitions and Thoughtseizes are not great for the deck. Jund can be tricky. They have a bunch of removal. They have discard spells and they have Liliana. So that can also be tricky. But you gotta know how to play around that shit, you know? Like, there's cool things you can do where you, like, end of turn, like, play two. Like, if you have five lands, you can play 2 3 drops. You know what I mean? So yeah. Then when you untap, you can do different things. Like, there's times where I played against, like, somebody who I knew they had an Abrupt Decay, because Abrupt Decay just, like, is so not great for the deck. People are playing Mizzium Skin to, like, get around the Abrupt Decays. But, like, there's times where you just get enough mana so that you can, like, when you know they have the Abrupt Decay, you put it out there, and then you go to combo with, like, with a twin or something, and then they're like, oh, I'll Abrupt Decay it, you know? And then you can untap it with another creature. So, like, you tap it, and then, like, when they go to Abrupt Decay, you can put another creature in and untap it and then still make a million dudes or whatever, you know? You got to fill it out, though, because they can also Abrupt Decay in response to you trying to put the enchantment on it or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of little tricky things you can do to play around it. And then Spellskite is great for that stuff. So
I'm sad that my deck is dead. The deck that I championed in last season is just gone. There was one copy. I don't know who that guy is, but Hexproof Auras, as it's under that category, there was one guy who made day two. I mean, bad matchups across the board. So
my buddy did well with Fish. He like got top 32 or something.
Sweet.
Yeah, he got $400 and like I don't know if it's top 32 or top 64, but him and his buddy, they both ran Fish and did all right with it.
Wow.
I mean, I see some names we recognize, like Noah Winston, top 16. What the fuck?
And yeah, that kid's funny. How do you know who Noah Winston is?
Well, long-time Twitter guy, I think.
Yeah, he's a little trader. He's a little red-headed trader.
Who now is a co-owner of MTG Card Market, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, wasn't he his partner was all over you for your beta set, right?
Yeah. They're talking to me about the we have a beta and alpha set. It's funny because I put that out on Twitter, and man, you see the big heavy hitters start emailing me, you know, and it's like, yeah, these guys are ballers. Like, beta sets typically go between, depending on condition, like retail is like $30,000 to $40,000. So,
oh, wow,
yeah. So this is like real money.
Hashtag ballers only. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, ballers only, man. Because then you get these guys who I stop responding to. Sorry, dudes. Like, I love you guys, but still, man. Come on. I can't, like, sit there all day responding to this stupid question. Like, people who are not going to buy the beta set. And, like, there's a lot of, like, negotiation that goes into the price, right? So, like, they're like, how much on the beta set? It's like, dude, you're not going to buy it. So, like, I'm not going to sit here and try to talk price with you. I know they're just out of curiosity wanting to
buy. Yeah, right.
You know, but then that kind of compromised my position as a negotiator, you know? So it's like, come on. Like, Do some research or something, bro.
Did anybody like ask you with like a really absurdly low price?
Nobody has given me an
okay.
Nobody has given me an offer. And these guys, like, obviously, like, you never want to make the offer, you know?
Right.
You never want to make the offer, but we always want them to make the offer. So, like, these big, like, dealers and stuff are like, what do you want for it? It's like, dude, make me an offer. Like, tell me what you want to pay for it. Like, I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to sell myself short, you know? What do I want? I want $50,000.
I'm not going to play the trading floor game with you. We are talking big boy money.
Yeah.
Put your big boy pants on. Put the binder away.
Yeah, how much money can you give me? I'll tell you if it's enough.
Anyways.
Yeah, that trading, like, at the trade floor, that talk kills me. What do you value it at?
Yeah. You're, like, talking about a $2 magic card. Yeah. What do you value it at? What do you value it at? Yeah. Well, since I spent, like, 15 minutes talking about it, and, like, I get paid, like, $35 an hour, I value it at, I guess, you know, 17 bucks. Like, I mean, what do you want me to say? What do I value it at? I value it at $2. Well, I was thinking more like $1.50. Oh, all right. Yeah, you earned that 50 cents, bro. Like,
come on. I was actually thinking like $1.97. Can we make that work?
Yeah.
$1.37. Yeah, that's my favorite when they check like TCG Mint. TCG Mint's about 508. And then it's like, all right, so $5. Well, what are we going to do about the 8 cents? It's like, we're going to just leave it in limbo, bro. We're going to leave it in the karma engine of the trade floor, and someone else will get it.
Anyways. Yeah, so that's that. That's cool.
So there's talk that – there's been talk after the event that people wanted to ban Birthing Pod. So I don't know if that's going to happen, John. It did win the last two events, right, Scott?
If it wins the next one, there's a pretty good chance that it's done.
No. How can you ban Birthing Pod? That thing is slow as shit, man. You know what happened? No, you know what happened? Birthing Pod was way too slow. And then Wizards banned everything else. And now, like, Birthing Pod is, like, a viable option. So, sure, they're going to ban it. Like, they'll ban everything in Modern. Next thing you know, Modern is going to be, like, a draft format where, like, 2/2s and 3/3s, like, run into each other. Like, flyers are going to rule the world.
So, KYT, tell us about your PTQ, sir.
Oh, man. So, I think I talked about last episode that I wanted to play Jund because I felt like it was the one deck where I could go in and not feel... I'll have some bad matchups, but not feel like a total dog where I'll just sit there and lose to Hexproof or Red Green Aggro. So I decided to play Redux Jund, almost at 75, except I cut, as other people do when they play Redux Jund deck, is cut the main deck ground seals for anything else. I just didn't think Junk was going to be a player, and I was off because it was quite played in my local PTQ. I replaced him with Dreadbore because I felt it gave me the versatility, and sometimes, you know, you just need it to kill a Jace or one of those Trevor Makers Planeswalkers that you face against those blue-white red decks. Mm-hmm. So I went X1-1 was able to draw in last round because I finally finished really high after right before the last round. So I finished third, which was the best X1, so I could finally draw in with my friend John Stern, who was first at the end of the PTQ with Bat and Hexproof. He was playing just for the flight, so
I was gonna say, isn't he already, like, he's already in there, right?
Right. So he was going to, everyone knew he was going to scoop to a fair number of people in the top eight in the finals.
Yourself included?
Sadly, I didn't get there. Yeah, myself included, I didn't get there. My only loss in the Swiss was against someone who played. Maybe you've seen this deck, Scott. I haven't, which is, it's basically Bant midrange, but it's splashed red. Like, it plays Sphinx Revelation for Thraxus, but it's splashed for Helix, and I even saw Pillar from this guy. Huh. So it was a much more greedy splash. But just my deck crapped on me, and I feel like, you know, I think we may have addressed it in this show where this format is just like so unforgiving when you mulligan. Yeah. I feel that way. At least with John, it's like it's not like modern John where I have Bloodbraid Elf and Bob to sort of come back.
Whoa. Modern John, you don't have Bloodbraid Elf, brah.
Okay. Used to. here, I really need like Garrick Primal Hunter. Like somehow I have to, if I multi five, somehow I have to hit that guy and have like a relevant threat to draw back the cards or have a timely Rakdos return to win the game. So I just multi five. Multi a six against this guy and just like never had a chance against that deck. He just like Sphinx Veil Revelation and I think ultimately dropped an Aetherling to kill me. Other than that, I faced a variety of decks in the Swiss, like whether it be the Jund Mirror, I faced a Junk deck, I faced a Blitz deck. Like it was a lot of variety and Jund was able to do its thing. I faced my friend Pavel in the top eight, who was playing the green-black Desecration Demon deck that I've talked about a lot on this show, and he just stomped me. I multi-five game one, didn't have a chance there. In game two, probably kept a loose seven, and just when I duressed him and I saw Murder, Putrefy, Sever the Bloodline, Mutilate, and not Liliana, but those four spells, I'm just like, and then in my hand were just like Olivia's that, you know, can't, there's no value gain there because he's just going to one for one me and then eventually get his demon out to kill me. And that's what eventually happened. And he went on to win the tournament. And one of the things that I was talking to John about in the Jund to Jund mirror, he likes to, and Reed Duke has talked about it, he likes to go on the draw in the Jund to Jund mirror. And I was debating now that I think back on it, maybe I should have done that against the green-black deck as well, because it comes down to, I think it comes down to Rakdos Return being an extremely important card to just knock out all those spot removals in his hand, and then for me to safely drop my spot removal.
Yeah.
Because he has no answer to Rakdos Return, and he can't Rakdos Return me, so... That's something that I thought about afterwards and probably should have gone on the draw against him, at least in games two and three, because game one, I do kind of fear an early Liliana from them, even though it's not amazing against Jund. It can be if he's able to just tick it up and just mutilate my threats, tick it up and like play the Desecration Demon and keep ticking it up and eventually like minus six or something, or just keep minusing to my Olivia or Huntmasters or whatever. So. That was my experience. I missed again, and have to wait. Have one more PTQ with M14 standard before we jump into Theros. So I'm crossing my fingers.
So when's your last PTQ?
In August. So next month after GP Calgary.
Gotcha. And it's in Montreal.
It's close to Montreal. I might be breaking my hiatus rule a bit. Oh, it's, man, in Burlington.
Life is out of balance. Life is out.
Yeah,
of balance.
Yeah, it's out of balance. It's out of balance. I'm breaking it away. And I'll be looking forward to Scott's thoughts post GP Calgary. That's going to be interesting to see. Like, there's, even though a lot of people are talking about how underpowered the set is, there's definitely a lot of players. And the legend rule, how it plays out, I have no idea. And of course, the reprinting of my guy, Glaive Cover Scout. So,
so it's interesting because I've been, you know, very very much like you, trying to scour a lot of our, you know, show buddies to try to find, you know, some lists that will be, you know, useful for us. I mean, for GP Calgary, and Jay still hasn't settled on a deck, so I'm, you know, trying to find some decks for him. I got a sweet hexproof deck from Raptor.
Wow. Like,
most up to date. So he sent me that over. I've been speaking to obviously Willie Edel, who was on my stream this week. We're talking to him about Naya. You know, there's all that sort of stuff going on. I would not be surprised to see, you know, some M4 post M14, like there's a lot of cards that actually are relevant. Glade Cover Scout's a big one. That I know that Justin and Phil are all over the new Black Human, the Sand Black Special, as I'm calling it. Jerry T actually also in his article this week wrote about a Black White Humans list. This is the Black 2 for a 2/2, or is he a 2/3? Hold on, I'm going to pull it up now.
What's his ability?
He's the one. Whenever another human goes to the, whenever another human dies, you get a 2/2 zombie.
Oh, he's like a rot lung reanimator reprint.
Yeah, he's fucking crazy.
So why are people all over this? Like, what's the tech?
Well, those two people I mentioned, like Justin and Phil, they're both playing Aristocrats Act 2.
Okay.
Or some version of it.
And so they like, basically sack a Doom Traveler and get a 2/2.
Yeah, and the 1/1.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
It's really good. Now, that being said, obviously Ratchet Bomb's back, so, you know, Control kind of gets a bit of a boost.
In yeah, but Ratchet Bomb always sucked.
So. It's shit, man. No, it's the card we keep bringing back to the show, yeah. And it's back again. What the fuck?
yeah, Ratchet Bomb is pretty shitty.
Wow. Necromancer just makes even, like, the stupid High Priest again, like, sick, right? Sack Doom Traveler, get a 1/1 and a 2/2, tap those two fuckers, and the Priest get a 5/5.
Yep.
I mean...
Yep.
What the fuck?
Yep. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, people have been talking for a while, like, Gaze of Granite, you know, when it first got released in Dragon's Maze, like, its stock rose fairly quickly just because people were looking for answers to, you know, Hexproof and tokens and, you know, like, a nice versatile sweeper. Like... You know, Ratchet Bomb is the same sort of thing for two with no color restriction. So I think you're going to see it in a bunch of sideboards. I don't know if it's, you know, necessarily going to be a format-defining card or really amazing. But I think there'll be a lot of people that respect the token decks between Advent of the Worm and all of this, like, insanity that we're talking about with the human decks and such. Then, I mean, you may see some people really respecting it and rocking a couple anyway.
Yeah, because people are idiots.
Well, I mean, you know. I'm not one to like, comment
how
on
is Ratchet Bomb better? what?
Just always flaming on Scott.
Well, I mean, just because you play them sideboard doesn't mean they're smart. I mean, there's some freaking sideboard cards that is like, what? It's like, yeah, because you see, I got it in there for backup.
Oh, yeah.
This card is for backup. In case you need a little more backup. It's like, what? Have you, I guess for the color restrict, because there's no color restriction, I guess it's, you know, it could be an option.
Yeah.
I'm being a little too hard on it. The stuff like Supreme Verdict and stuff out of the control decks, though, I think is probably better than, like, Ratchet Bomb, you know?
Oh, I agree completely. I agree completely. But, I mean, like, that's on four, and if you're on the draw, right, like, you may be dead. So yeah, no, I understand. Like, yeah. So
has Gaze ever been played, Scott? Like, ever?
Gaze was played in Jund, in the sideboard. It was also played in Junk Aristocrats. It was played fairly heavily in the Black Green X Junk, Block decks also.
Okay, because it's disappeared, right, from the metagame.
Well, now it has, because people have just gotten smart and they finally realize to just play Barter in Blood and shut the fuck up about it. But, you know, then you're still dealing with the fact that, you know, it doesn't handle a lot of the other troublesome permanents. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, Barter and Blood doesn't really do anything when they go Lingering Souls Flashback, and you're like, buh. You know? Buh. But I don't know. Like, I don't think... I mean, I don't know what Theros is going to bring, but intuitively, I don't think Ratchet Bomb's going to be very good outside of this window before rotation. Like, yeah, I think it's going to be at its best during this time.
It's like, it's just like, yeah, the Lingering Souls Flashback, and then you're like Ratchet Bomb.
Yep.
Kill your four guys.
Plus your voice token and the demon token. Nice deck, bro. Like, anyways.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, if they have a voice token and a demon token, and then they Lingering Souls, then sure, Ratchet Bomb got there, but it's like, what the fuck are you doing this whole time?
Anyways, it's like I said, it's going to be at its best, I think, before rotation, and then after that, who knows? I have no idea.
Oh man, we'll see. I mean, it's seen plenty of a sideboard play, like when it was in standard before. Yeah. So, like, it's probably going to happen.
I mean, it's a pretty good reprint. I think it'll be a pretty good litmus test for the format.
A litmus test? What do you mean by that?
Well, all I'm saying is that it'll give us a really good indication of where the format sits in terms of speed and tempo based on whether or not we see ratchet bombs being played or not. That's all.
Like, okay, so you say like the more ratchet bombs in the sideboard, the faster the format is?
I'm just going to say the more prevalent decks like Tokens and Banned Hexproof are actually going to end up being. Like, you really want to be able to play Supreme Verdict or Bonfire of the Damned against Hexproof as an example. But if you don't really have access to either one of those because you're playing something else, you know, or like Mutilate or some other sweeper, but, you know, maybe some decks just want a ratchet bomb.
So you're going to, like, try to ratchet bomb against Banned Hexproof?
Well, I mean, realistically, you get into the situation where the only ones that, like, if you can go for one or two, I mean, you're going to wipe half the board, especially if Glade covers.
Yeah, but that's like turn four for ratchet bomb for two. And you're not even getting their Geist of Saint Trap.
So Ratchet Bomb for one is going to get Ethereal Armor. It's going to get Glade Cover Scout. It's going to get the Mana Dork.
Okay, so on turn three, you'll get all those one drops.
Right. So it's going to give you an opportunity to slow your opponent and stabilize. Like, being able to wipe out, even if they've like gone all in and multiple. Anyways, it's not optimal, but it's going to be fine enough. There will be decks that will be looking for the effect.
Oh, I'm saying, yeah, the effect will probably be good against some decks. I'm just not sure, like, Ban Hexproof is the deck you want Ratchet Bomb against.
Listen, it's going to be fine enough. Like I said, it's not the optimal.
So, like, on turn four,
oh,
you're
God,
like,
no.
On turn four,
you know what?
Like,
I'm dying.
I'll a Ratchet Bomb for two.
Sure.
Or I could just Supreme Bird and don't crap off the board.
You could do that too. Sure. All
right. And, like, a few months later, that's Scott's going to be right.
It never happens. It's fine.
Scott, I did want to ask your opinion because...
Why? I'm wrong anyway.
No. I respect your opinion.
Are you sure?
I've always respected your opinion, Dad. So, everyone expects me to brew up the hottest Hexproof deck. And Joshua Leamish goes up to me this week and says, do you really think Hexproof is going to be good? The white decks gain access to Celestial Flare now. And I want to know if you think Celestial Flare will be a player or if Leamish is just out of his mind.
Well, isn't it just like Renounce the Guilds? Isn't it exactly the same card? Like, against Hexproof? Isn't it almost exactly the same card?
That would be correct.
Yeah. So
a bit harder to cast too. Harder to cast too. Double white.
Yeah.
Well, so, I didn't even see it like that. That's a great. I didn't even think about that.
Because, like, ideally, you're looking to Voltron up your Geist of Saint Draft, and unless you've got an Unflinching Courage on it, it's basically the same card. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, I guess it's slight. Like, if I'm playing Voices and shit, then it's slightly better. So I'm trying to see how relevant that card is.
Sure. But if you're playing instant speed, like, okay, so if your opponent is playing instant speed removal to try to kill your guy and you've got a voice on the table, you're already winning, right?
Right.
Okay.
That's fair.
Okay. Just making sure.
So what for me, I'm not really that excited. I'm excited for Scout to come back just because there's so much nostalgia for me, even though I haven't been apart from that card for that long. But one of the toughest decks to beat when I was playing Bago was Jund. And Liliana is still very much in the format. It's still very much one of the best decks. So as long as people are packing Liliana's and Barb and Blood, I mean, Scout plus Geist is not exactly enough to make it like the high nut, the best deck again, or what if it ever was the best deck. So I'm very looking forward to just keep playing Jund, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
So this Rotlung reprint sounds pretty dope.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, even Jerry's bringing Black White Humans. Like, that's crazy. I played against Kevy today. Like, I was writing my article, and then I was like, I need a moto break, and he called in sick. So I played Kevy Metal on moto today. and so he, like, battled against me with this, like, mono white, brutastical, amazing thing. Anyways, so he's like, you know, Champion of the Parish and Gather the Townsfolks and Intangible Virtues and ridiculous one drop humans and then Silverblade Paladins, O Rings, and Entreat the Angels. Fuck you, Entreat the Angels. Anyways, oh god, what was the point that I was just making?
that, you know, mono white humans is awesome?
The humans. Yeah. Well, black white humans, right. Yeah. And there were some draws that he had that were just like really, really fast. Like, and it was just like out of nowhere and there's nothing you can do. You're like, oh, you're at six. Oh, you're dead. And so, I mean, the human tokens were always pretty good. I mean, like, I could play black-white tokens at the beginning of the season, right before Ravnica came in, and it was fine. Like, it did a lot of damage very quickly. I mean, not having Honor of the Pure now is a little bit rough, but, I mean, now instead we've got sort of that human sub-theme that still furthers and drives the tokens, so you can kind of get, like, the human buffs alongside the token buffs, and it actually all sort of, like, almost mirrors the double buff that we had when we had Intangible Virtue and Honor of the Pure, so... I don't know, man. Like, we may see some scary, scary aggressive things until the format closes. Like, Lingering Souls may just not be done yet.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how much scarier they can get from, like, this red-green aggro deck, you know?
Well, so, like, red-green aggro basically tramples through it anyway, right? Like, but, like, that's the only deck. And, I mean, that was really popular for a couple weeks, and now it's starting to taper off a little bit, too.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of that. That deck is really fast and really consistent, you know?
Yep.
So, like, I don't know how much faster you can get, man.
Yeah.
Plus that freaking... Oh, man, that Gore Clan Rampager is such a bitch, man. It's
very good.
Oh, I hate it. I hate it because, like, the droolies run that card, man. And they just love it. They just love it, man. They're just like, swing with that creature, and you can see the anticipation in their face. They're just like... I'm going to rampage this creature. Oh, man. He's not going to see it coming. And I'm just like, yeah, he's going to rampage, and I can't do shit about it. And then I'll be like, these are my blocks. Rampager, rampager. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I know.
Yep, yep. Wait, what's this? What's this? Oh, it's a Selesnya charm. Right. Oh. Get that shit out of here.
My favorite is Abrupt Decay.
That's better, too. Yeah,
it's better. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to take, oh, nothing, because I'm going to Abrupt Decay.
Oh, you. It's a slow roll.
Oh, I slow roll the shit out of people. I love it. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I love slow rolling.
I love Rampager. I have an unhealthy,
yeah, that card is unhealthy good.
One for that right now, too. I'm not truly.
But... When they cast it, you know they're a good player.
No, I agree. When you attack, okay, so it's just like this. So when you attack, and they clearly have Rampager, right? And they got like 4 mana up, and they just like attack into your guy, and you don't block?
Uh-huh.
The sign of the good player is, do they cast it? Like, that's the moment. In that moment. And you're like, because if they hold it, and they cast like some other stupid 2-drop, you probably should win that game.
Yeah, yeah, that happens a lot. Like they'll cast it, and then you're like, this guy knows what he's doing. All right, I didn't fall for his trick, and now he's just gonna beat me with a 4/4 trampler.
probably should have blocked.
should have fainted ignorance.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, is Junk Reanimator still deck? I haven't played Standard in forever. I don't think it's still deck, huh?
Yeah, it is. But people now are just finally realizing, like, I think it was BBD that just wrote a big article about it. He and CVM went down to Summer, drove like 1,000 kilometers.
BBD and CVM, they all went on the GGR and played at the QMC.
Yep. Yep. ABC, CVM, BBD. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
The East Coast family. Yeah.
People who don't like... aren't in the Magic tournament scene have no idea what you just said, but that's fine.
So anyways, SCG, CVM, BBD, there you go. Okay. So basically, he played a list that just brought Ghost Daddy back. He's like, you know what? I don't need to main deck these acidic slimes. I'm just going to cram these Obsidats down your throat. And, I mean, it looks pretty good. The deck's reasonable, like 3 Angels... 3 Arbor Elf, 3 Restos, 4 Pilgrim, 2 Fiend Hunter, 4 Thragtusk, 2 Obsidat, 2 Garrick Relentless, 2 Lingering Souls, and then a bunch of Unbarrel Rites and Tutor stuff, plus an Abrupt Decay. That seems pretty good. Sideboard seems pretty hot. I mean, you got like a couple Tristanis, more of the creatures, some acidic slimes. Like, it seems pretty good.
This is the same crap that I was playing back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I guess it's still a deck.
Yeah. So it's all right. But like Obsidat, obviously, is just kind of like filling in the slime spot right now, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
In the main deck. In the main deck. In the sideboard, obviously, it's still there. So yeah, still a deck.
Maybe I'll play that. Maybe I'll play that tomorrow at Friday Night Magic.
You should. Are you going to Friday Night Magic tomorrow?
I'm going to have to, man, because I can't be coming to the A-team not playing any Magic except for EDH.
It feels fucking terrible, doesn't it?
It does feel terrible, because, like, I don't have any sweet stories, and, like, my EDH games are not even games anymore, man. Like, people just, they want to just kill me, man. They just want to kill me. They don't want to see me live, you know?
Yeah. I can appreciate that. I don't, I'm not allowed to suffer to live at a Commander table either, so...
Yeah, my new hatred for Commander. I actually love Commander, but the newest thing that I hate in Commander is glistening oil.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really? Yeah. There's some guy, and I'm not going to call him a douchebag because I got in trouble for calling someone else a douchebag last episode.
Uh-huh.
But there's this guy.
When has that stopped you?
Well, I got a Facebook message, and he's like, "So I'm a douchebag now, huh?" I'm just like, oh, man. I'm like, I didn't use your name, brah. Like, I'm just adding it for dramatic effect.
Oh, man.
All right. So yeah, this guy runs freaking glistening oil, and I've got killed by this thing, like, twice already. And, like, what ended up happening, it pissed me off the most, is because, so I'm running my 68 lands deck, okay? It's five color, like, 68 or 66 lands. And I had to shuffle it because I had it all blocked out. Well, what ends up happening is I play turn one exploration, and then like I play my second land. Turn two, I play like an Oracle of Madaya with put my fourth land out, and I'm out of lands. So I flip the top card. I'm like, I got an Oracle. I got 68 lands in the deck. These guys only have two lands in play. We're sitting pretty. Fast forward, like seven turns later, my hand is seven cards, and they're all spells. The card on top of my deck is a spell, okay? And, like, basically, these guys have now seven lands in play. I have four, and I'm the lands deck. And it's just not working out, man. It's like, you know, I am not able to get lands. So I'm playing these spells. Like, I have a Crucible out. I have a Trade Routes. And I'm trying to, like, cycle through my spells so I can get to my lands. And this freaking guy, he just starts killing all my enchantments and artifacts. He's like, yeah, I don't trust you, man. So he Relic Crushes. And I hate that. First of all, Relic Crush, I hate that card because it's like seems like such a crappy card. But in EDH, it's actually good, but I just won't admit it. And he freaking kills two of my things. And I'm just like, why are you doing that? Like, I have four lands. I can't even play my lands. I don't even have the colors I need, you know? So, I got super pissed at him. Oh, because he also Beast Within one of my other enchantments. So he's just like Beast Within, Relic Crush you. And I'm like, okay, like whatever, dude. Like, so I have this 3-3 and my Oracle Moldiah. And I'm like, you know what? I'm like, fuck this guy, man. I'm just going to start beating him with this beast that he gave me, right? So like I swing in my beast and my Oracle Moldiah. And I hit him for five. I'm like, take five. And he's like, okay. And so I pass the turn to the guy next to me. The guy next to me has like a 5/5 dragon or whatever. And the guy freaking puts a glistening oil on it and like does something else to pump it. And then like blood rushes some guy and kills me with it. And it's like, what? Like if I had a blocker, like I don't think it was a dragon because the way it worked out is if I had a blocker, then I could have just blocked and not died to this poison.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, I got so pissed off at the guy Relic Crushing all my crap that I swung at him. And then this dude next to him, this not douchebag, you know, freaking just puts glistening oil and just kills me in one shot. I'm just like, oh, gosh. Like, this game is miserable. Friggin' can't stick an enchantment to save my life. Trying to get some lands in play. All these other douchebags have, like, eight lands in play. I have four. And then they kill me with glistening oil. I was like, what is this? But to be fair, the guy who was like Relic Crushing the shit out of my dreams, he in the next game tried to make it up to me. He tried to make it up to me by doing some kind of gesture of good faith. I don't remember what it was. It didn't matter anyways because the other two guys just, you know, raffle stomped me anyways. because they like didn't get enough beating on me last turn or last game. So yeah, so those are my two EDH games. I did discover this new deck. It's a mono black deck with a black general that says if a creature with like power one or less goes to the graveyard, put it back in play. Have you heard of this?
Harobi Death's Wail? Or Hikori Dust Drinker?
No, it's got to be Harobi then, because Dust Drinker is like some kind of white creature.
Let me see.
Let me see if that's the right one, because listeners might want to know about this guy.
Yeah.
No, it's not Harobi. It's something else. It's a mono black general that says if a creature has power one or less. And basically what it does is it bring it back. I don't know what the guy's called. Look it up on Gather. I can't find it. But this guy had, like, Blood Artist. He had, like, some other thing that, like, if you remove two counters from it, you draw a card. And he had this crazy stuff, man. And it was basically the way he killed you was just by, like, sacrificing his stuff and just Blood Artist draining you over and over again and, like, gaining all this insane value off these, like, one power creatures or less, you know? So it's pretty crazy. It's a pretty crazy deck. I wanted to ask him for his deck list because it was one of the more interesting mono black deck lists that I've seen.
Cool.
So yeah, that was the Magic I played. Wish I could have played some other Magic. Oh, something else cool that's happening. I don't know. Have you guys played Duels of Planeswalker 2014?
Yeah, I have it.
Do you like it?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
The guys at work are getting into Magic because of this game.
Wow.
So, like, my buddy, like, we played Magic on and off. He had cards, like, from back in the day. So we played, but I could never really get him into it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, for some reason, he, like, downloaded Duels on his iPad. And he's been junking out on that, like, every night. Every day he comes to work at the coffee machine. And he's like, oh, dude, played some more games, man. I've been kicking some ass with my mono green deck. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, dude, I realized something last night. He's like, I had some creatures on the field, and the guy was, like, starting to overwhelm me with his army. And he's like, so I cast this card that makes everyone sacrifice their creatures, right? And he's like, but my creature stayed. My big creature with Annihilator stayed. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, you probably cast all his dust. And he's like, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, that says sacrifice all colored permanents, not colorless. And he's like, yeah, man, I didn't know that. So, like, he totally, like, once I did that, I just swung through and killed him. And I'm like, yeah, dude. So, like, he's getting into it. And then since he's been talking about it at the coffee machine for the whole week, like, everyone else at the coffee machine has downloaded Duels, like, on their Androids.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, all right, guys, I'll tell you what. I'm going to download it on my iPad. I'm going to whoop your ass with it.
And, yeah.
You know, I'm going to show you guys who's boss. And then my friend's like, I don't know, man. I'm pretty good with games. And I'm like, you're not going to beat me at Duels of Planeswalker, okay, bro? It's not going to happen.
The only way you will win is variance, sir. And yeah. It is a cruel bitch-ass mistress that you will learn of very quickly.
Yeah, so that's awesome. It's pretty cool that people are – it's like – it's exactly what Wizards wanted to happen.
Yeah.
And Duels is really is doing that. So I think that's cool.
Nice.
So those are my magic moments.
Well, I had a whole fucking week ram-packed of Magic this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you had the streams, right?
I ran two streams this week. So yeah. That's already, like, over half of my week consumed by Magic, plus one day of actual, like, editing and article writing. So, like, I almost all week so far has just been Magic. So it's been fucking awesome. I'm very, very excited. GP Calgary is going to be, like, completely retarded. Let alone the party, okay? The parties were just, like, sick. The Toronto party was unreal. Montreal, I don't even remember. That's how good it was. This is Jay's fucking bachelor party. Like, Jay's bachelor party! For fuck's sakes, people! Do the right thing! yeah, it's going to be outstanding. The event itself, I'm actually really stoked for. Like, I've been practicing with the deck. I'm very familiar with, you know, now, like, so when I first started playing Modern, right, when we first started doing the stream.
Modern.
Yeah, I was just like, it took me a long time to kind of figure out what the decks were, what the relevant cards were, you know, and that's once I started really, you know, just playing a lot more and getting the hang of what to expect and, you know, what to expect out of each deck as it comes along, then my results started to improve, right? As especially once I slid into Jund, you know, which is a nice, you know, healthy, disruptive mid-range deck, it really helped me, you know, establish a higher level of play. So now that I'm starting to get the hang of sort of what the other decks are, what they're doing, what I'm doing, and I've really started to, like, hammer a bunch of the kinks out, I'm very, very happy with the way this deck is. Willie Edel was on the stream, like I said, on Tuesday. So Monday, Hexproof is just a bad matchup in general. So we decided to try a bunch of different things with Hexproof. I actually tried out a whole paradigm shift because, like, the deck... So think about this. Like, Naya and Jund... They both interact. They seek to interact with the opponent's creatures, right? Like whether Jund's just killing them straight up with removal, or whether, you know, they're using cards like Boros Reckoner or Dami Raid or something like that in Naya, right? And so the idea is, what if instead of Ray of Revelations, which is just generally awkward. Right? Like, they're so narrow. And you just, like, if you don't draw them in multiples, like, with stuff, then, like, they're just useless. If you're going to have a narrow slot anyway, why don't you just go all out? Instead of having to side out all these cards that are shitty because you can't use them against your opponent's creatures, why don't you just side into Glaring Spotlights?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, in theory, it seems fine. Like, I don't all of a sudden now don't... Like, my Selesnya Charms are good because they're going to make a huge guy and I'm going to exile it. And my Missing Mortars are better because I can just, like, kill a Geist's Saint Draft. And, you know, it really makes them play a fair game with me. So we tried it out, and it seems like a neat way to do it. But in order to do it, you kind of have to guarantee you have one on turn one. And in order to do that, you have to play four. And then you realize that you're playing four Glaring Spotlights in your sideboard.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, nope. Anyways, so it was interesting. It was worth an exercise.
I like the logic, though, how you evolved to just, like, playing two and then playing four, and then it's just worth it because, like, they're just putting a lot of things on one guy, so you can sack having, like, a sketchy card like Glaring Spotlight because you're just going to 3-for-1 or 4-for-1 them. So.
Yeah, so it's not a bad strategy if that's where you want to be, and if the rest of your matchups are fine and you don't need to worry about the space, like, Jund has tools anyway. Like, you just play Barter in Blood. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're fucked anyway. But, like, if you're in, like, a green-white or, like, a Naya end, like, I don't know whether that's where, you know, how you want to do it. Like, you can race. If you're, you know, red-white-blue flash or something, maybe, you're going to have a lot harder of a time, right? Like, you got Supreme Verdict, but you're playing, like, two, you know? So, you know, if that's where you wanted to be and that's your worst matchup and everything else is fine, you could probably just play four Glaring Spotlights and call it a day. Like, it was fine in Naya. Three, you know, it was reasonable. I mean, if you're going to have a narrow slot anyway, why not just have it as narrow as possible? You know, and have it impact your main gameplay, your main game strategy, as little as possible.
Typically,
right?
I agree with that, but, like, the problem is that you have a narrow card that you need another card to be good with.
I totally agree with you. And I totally agree. And that's what I ended up finding in my evaluation, right? Like, and we went through this on Monday, and that's sort of like the same summary I came to. It's just like, if you don't have the narrow card and something else, it doesn't really do anything. Now, that said, Ray of Revelation is in the same situation, but I could bring a Ray of Revelation in against, like, a mono-white control deck and toast all their Oblivion Rings and still be okay with that, right?
Whereas, yeah, you can get Detention Spheres or Oblivion Rings or anything like that.
Yeah, whereas you couldn't do that with Glaring Spotlight. Like, the best you're going to get out of that is an Alpha Strike.
Yeah, the other thing about Ray of Revelation is, like, sometimes, like, against those decks, you know, the Hexproof deck or whatever, sometimes they just might not have, they might have, like, a couple enchantments, you know?
Yeah.
And you draw, like, one Ray, and then, boom, it puts you back in the game. Especially if you get to block and then blow them out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's the dream. But, I mean, typically good, like, enchantment players are not going to, like, open themselves up to the, like, blowout block, you know?
Yeah. So we ended up, the experience was good. I agree with you, KYT, in the fact that, you know, I was pretty proud of deciding to go about it a different way, you know, and the way that I decided to view it, you're right. I thought it was pretty sweet. ultimately what it came down to is I really had to make a decision between Bonfires or Mizzy Mortars. Because, like, Mortars, I really love Mortars. I love having access to Mortars in my deck. They're very, very good. So flexible. Exactly what, you know, the Nihilist is looking for. That said, like, they're actually just shitty against Hexproof. Like, just so shitty. By the time you're ever going to overload that, their guy's like 8-7, and you're fucking dead. So, I was like, arg. So, if that's the case, like, if you want to shore up some match points against Hexproof, you basically have to run Bonfire. But, like, Bonfire's in the situation where it's just so bad against so many decks, you know? And you can find yourself with too many Bonfires in the situation where you open up with two Bonfires in your hand, and you might as well mold to five.
Yeah,
that's too many Bonfires.
And it's not even that good on the draw if they just, you know, go turn two, Stalker, turn three, like a bunch of enchantments, and then it's way out of range already. Yeah. So
So thankfully Willie had the solution.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm ready for this.
Are you ready? You play Mizzy Mortars and Bonfire. It was awesome. So yeah, so we had like one of the most amazing nights ever on stream on Tuesday, and I totally suggest that you guys go and watch it. It was like 4 hours long, but it was entertaining as fuck, and I totally promise it'll be worth it. Willie is just a fantastic guy. I was so glad to have him on the show, and he's gonna come back and like the week of Calgary, which is even fucking hotter, and I'm because like M14 I think will be legal then, and it's gonna be absurd. So I'm very 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 happy. That said. We faced Hexproof round one. We jumped into the daily event, the standard daily, and our first round opponent was actually Hexproof, and we took that bitch down.
Yeah, tied it up.
Right,
tied it. Yeah,
and I was like, all right, we can do this. And like, as soon as we won our match against Hexproof, I know that there was no way we were going to lose, and so apparently it was a. Somebody, I think it was Orin Alchemist on Twitter, Acosta, Luis Acosta, he ended up saying, you know, I just watched all of it, and I can tell you that if you could combine your luck with Willie's skill, you'd have the next Kaibude. it was awesome. It was so awesome. So yeah, we had some pretty sick plays. There's like this unbelievable Garrick play, which I'm gonna actually just have KYT link into the show notes, and so you guys can like click on the epic Garrick play. And we were like basically at one against Blitz, and they had like three creatures to our one, and we had to find a way to not die. And we like and I guess one of the Moto Grinders, Bolov Zero, that was in the chat also. Just came up with, you know, suggested this play, and it was fucking unreal. So, suffice it to say, it won us the game in one shot, and because there was just no way that our opponent could go back from it. So you should check it out, because it's fucking hot.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. It's pretty fun real.
Fun real! I'm so taking that. Yeah, so yeah, Calgary's going to be sick. I can't wait to go.
Maybe I'll play your Naya deck for FNM.
You want to?
I might. I like the sound of this deck.
I'll ship. Well, I mean, the list as it stands at the end of the stream is basically where it's at right now. I'll be making some changes to M14. Like, I'm going to be adding Oozes and such.
They're not. Oh, yeah. It's when's M14 pre-release? Like, the very first.
Pre-release is this weekend. So
Does it start at midnight usually? Yeah. Okay. That's why FNF is not.
Doesn't mean M14 is legal, though, right? Like, it's not legal
until. Oh, right.
The next week, so. But yeah, so like I get in Friday or I get in Thursday night and we're going to podcast on the Thursday of Calgary, which is going to be absurd. And then Friday, Jay and I get to be in the face-to-face games booth and we're going to do like token signings and meet and greets. And it's fucking awesome. So awesome. We're handing it. They have like an exclusive Calgary token, which is wild. Which is like some cowboy guy with a lasso, but like in a superhero outfit. It's fucking awesome. It's awesome. And the Canadian flag playmats are going to be back also. They're running them back for that. So, like, I'm, like, way excited for this event. It's going to be crazy.
It's going to be crazy. So, crazy.
You're still wrestling with coming out, aren't you?
Who, me?
No, KYT.
I am, but I have to, like, fly back Sunday morning. That's pretty brutal if I did that.
Why do you have to come back Sunday morning? Because that's when your thing is?
Sunday night is the wedding. The wedding I have to be here before here.
So if you're going to do that, then you have to fly out Thursday also.
Yeah, if I did that, yeah.
Yeah. So then you can actually stay for a bit. And we
knowing me, though, like, when it doesn't matter, it's like XO day one and be like, fuck, stop it. You're
like, fuck you, wedding. I need my pro points. Yeah.
Flight rescheduled.
Yeah. But it's going to be awesome. I just seriously can't wait. But yeah, so the deck is pretty awesome, John. We're actually I've been playing Sublime Archangel for a while. Just because it really just gives you this like mid-game punch where you can, you know, if you're playing other mid-range decks or other creature decks, you can just kind of like stall up with your higher quality guys, like against Blitz and all that sort of crap also. Like Red-Green Aggro also is a situation where you can do this.
Uh-huh.
And you're playing like Boros Reckoners, Smiters, you know, and like right now Flinthoof Boars, but they'll become obviously like Scavenging Oozes. And you can just kind of like stabilize the board. It's a couple Huntmasters, and we've got our own Rampagers, there's Dami Raids. And so you stabilize the board, and then you just all of a sudden, like, play this Sublime Archangel. And until Doomblade comes in, the only card that really kills it that's actually seeing play are, like, Putrefy and Whirlleader's Helix that are instant, instant speed.
There's another one that does it.
Turn and Burn can do it, too. Tragic Slip, Orzhov Charm, sure. But, like, those have to be active. Orzhov Charm doesn't.
I was thinking about the Esper All-Star of Warped Physique.
Yeah, that card can do it too.
Yeah, that's the one that, you know, sees so much tournament play.
Esper is just everywhere, you know? So, anyways, there's very, very few instant speed answers to it that are actually being played. And so you just drop it, and then you just, like, bash with an elf. And it's, like, fucking 8-8. You know what I mean? And you still have all of your defense up. They have to deal with this crazy threat that next turn is going to go over the top of all their shit and push them in, you know? Even worse, if they go, oh, I'll just play this flyer, and then you go, like, Thundermaw Hellkite, tap your flyer, bash you, oh, all these Exalted triggers. Like, it's very, very good. Combines.
How many Thundermaws do you run?
Full book, 4.
All right, I'm in.
Yeah, yeah. So it's fun. It also plays very well with other abilities, too. Like, the Jami Raid fight ability is very good. You've got some trample tricks also. So, like, the Exalted, you can make it, you know, super awesome. Willie had some feedback to the sideboard, which has been amazing. Like, I truly believe that his little kind of like tinkering with the list that he and I had just before the stream on Tuesday had such a big impact on it. Like, it feels better. You look at it on paper and it's like, oh, it's all ones ofs and one ofs and two ofs and all that sort of crap. Yeah. But then once you actually like watch
the Carry stream, Dan, edit that out.
Yeah. Once you watch the stream and you see sort of like all the cards coming in and out and what the finished products look like before we hit submit, it all comes together and I'm just like, wow. Like, it's beautiful. It's a work of art. I'm so excited. So
is this list up right now?
Oh, I don't know. Actually. No, because it was last night.
It's coming up Friday. It's coming up 4 minutes.
Nice.
No, wait. Did you already submit it?
Yeah. I don't know. They only put up one daily.
Hmm.
So I don't know if ours is going to show. LSV also 4-0'd the daily as well.
I want to see this deck.
Let's see. When was it? So it would have been like the 9th?
Hmm.
Daily. Standard daily. Standard daily on the 9th.
While you're looking for that, a guy named Cole wanted to buy some Zendikar basic lands off me.
Yeah.
The full art. Uh-huh. And so I don't like things waiting around in the office here, you know. So I told him, yeah, I'll get you a shipping number of like how much it costs to ship them. So Brandon found out how much it costs to ship them. And I told Brandon, oh, just ship them to the guy. Just ship them to the guy, and then I'll just tell the guy this is how much it costs, so just pay me, right? So I ship them to the guy, and I go, hey, your lands have been shipped. Here's how much money you owe me. It's like $157 in basic lands, you know? And he goes, done. I haven't received them yet, but in the future, you might want to consider having your customers pay prior to shipping. He's like, it's possible that someone could take advantage of the situation, and getting payment could be difficult. And then he put a pound sign at MTG Finance, you know? And then I sent him a Cedric the Entertainer video clip. And I said, I live by the wish factor. I said, more details below. And I sent him the Cedric Entertainer video clip. And I guess we could maybe put that in the show notes. And so basically it's like, yeah, I wish someone would rip me off, you know, so that I could, like, kick some ass, you know?
Let's go post it.
And so he writes back. He goes, nice. Hit them till they stop moving. Oh, sick. Man. Shout out to Cole. Sick. Shout out to Cole.
So yeah, I'll send you the list if you want. It's fun. I think you may have it, but you may have the post M14 version too. So
yeah, just send me the list so I know what. Send me like exactly what list you would play at FNM tomorrow.
Tomorrow, I may actually like. There's a slight possibility that I make it out to FNM tomorrow.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like, if you make it or not, like, what would you play? Yeah. Like, send me that list.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, and then maybe I'll play that. Maybe I'll throw down, man.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, enough of this, like, trying to sell beta sets and, like, shipping people basic lands.
Let's play some fucking,
like,
Magic.
Getting destroyed in EDH. I'm going to go sit down and play some tournament Magic.
Uh-oh.
Where you guys can't 3v1 me. You can't arch-enemy me, you know? It's going to be one-on-one, mano-e-mano. And then we'll see who emerges victorious, huh?
What was that last card? Arg! What was it? Oh, yeah. This. Yeah, I'll send this to you in just, like, 2 seconds. I'm almost there. All right, so, yeah. So that's awesome. So, KYT, if you're not going to make it out to Calgary, then you said your next one that you're going to be down for is, like, in August?
In August, the MDSS in Toronto, baby.
Woo!
The big, like, it's the biggest one. I mean, we started slow with feeling out the interest, but this is – we're putting a lot of our marbles into this one, the MDSS 5K. So it's our first 5K ever, and we're going to have our lovely Scotty Mac doing some coverage.
Uh-oh.
And I'm glad Peter listened – like Face-to-Face Games listened to the feedback instead of having at the event at the Legion, which is – the place that all PT grinders absolutely hate and detest. They got pretty sick hotel from what I heard, and it's Kelly approved. And if it's Kelly approved, it must be insane.
It's the same hotel that they've had all of the that they had the WMCQ at.
Okay.
And it's big, like it's very big. There's like fucking 4 huge rooms. So yeah, the entire floor they rented out. Apparently, it's gonna be enormous. Everything. It's always been comfortable in there. Never hot, never cold. Like, it's been really good. I hear they're doing like, isn't there a legacy side event too?
Right. Legacy side event.
Prize is a foil Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Yeah, that's gross. I gotta.
Whoa, that's big game, man.
It's a big game. Yeah, $8 drafts too.
Ship me a list, John. Back to the old crazy talk days.
For Legacy?
Yeah.
You can run my Bantblade deck, which is splashing black for Deathrites and
I don't know anything about Legacy anymore.
they call that Deathblade these days, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of a hipster. I was playing that shit way before, like, before BBVD QRX started playing it.
BDQRX.
Yeah, like, I also don't run Forcible's main deck.
Huh.
So, you gotta have balls, man. You gotta be able to just, the idea is just to put more threats on the board. Let them overuse their Force of Wills, let them tax their hand, and then just, you just beat them with your threats. And then, like, against the combo deck, you just board in the full book of Force of Wills. Bring in 2 more Flusterstorms to get to 4 Flusterstorms against combo decks. And they have a tough time beating you.
Sweet.
I'm running Geist of St. Traff main, too, so.
I'll check it out.
Nice abrupt decays, bro. Nice abrupt decays. Yeah. You can kill my angel. Can't kill my Geist.
Sick.
I'm really looking forward to this event. Like, FACE has also decided to have 4, like, vendors on site, including themselves. So they've decided to, I guess, take a page out of Kelly for making the biggest PTQ in North America ever, I think. And I'm hoping this is going to be big. So hope to see some of you there.
And we'll see you there. This event is going to be huge. Hundreds of Magic players.
Wait, wait.
What legacy side event?
And $8 drafts all day. Definitely not an event to be missed, especially with the 5K guaranteed prize pool.
Wow. I'm pumped. I gotta go.
More Magic the Gathering than you can handle. So, yeah, it's going to be crazy. There's like so much good stuff happening this summer. It's unreal.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you know what? I also, super pumped about Gen Con. That's coming up in a month.
Yeah. So wow. I understand that you've got one hell of a roommate.
Actually, I do not.
Oh.
So what ended up happening was, so here's a little public service announcement. So if you want to book a room for Gen Con, you're going to want to do that like 4 months in advance. Okay? Apparently, within 2 hours of the badges going on sale, downtown Indianapolis was booked. So Gen Con is retarded busy. It's just like so crazy. So I thought I was all super smart, right? And I'm like, oh man, it's a month before Gen Con? I think I'm going to start booking my room now, you know? Try to get it going a little bit early. So I had my office manager make some calls. I gave her the full list of hotels. I'm like, here's like in order of the ones I want to be in. But if we can't get these ones, like, let's, you know, here's the full list from the Gen Con website. She calls all of them. All of them are booked solid. Okay, like we're not even talking group rates. We're talking about like every room in the hotel is booked solid. So then I cry about it on Twitter. I'm like, can't get a room. And Aaron Campbell, the person who does the deck tease on Legitim TG. Yeah. Aaron Campbell, she was like, I got a room with my press pass. Ooh. And she goes, you can have that room if you want, if you're interested. And she's like, it's 8 miles away. And I'm like, yeah, that'd be awesome. Like, I'd be interested in staying there. And so she had posted on Twitter that I was staying in her room. But what she meant was that it's her room, but she won't be in the room. It's just like it's available to her. But it doesn't really matter anyways, because then when we followed up on it, they said they're booked.
Oh.
So I guess 8 miles out is also booked.
Wow.
Yikes.
So like I don't know where I'm going to stay. Probably just going to sleep on the benches or like, you know, find some A-Team fans who want to hook a brother up. I don't know, man.
Is that when Mantell stayed with you last year? Was that it?
Yeah. Well, you know, like, I don't really know who stays with me at Gen Con, because here's the thing. Like, I'm traded until, like, 5 in the morning. So whoever's in that room, when I go in there and take a nap for a couple hours, I have no idea.
Nor does he actually care.
Yeah, I don't care either. Like, all I have to do is, like, I just put my head on my trade bag and I just sleep. Like, last time I was at Gen Con, it was so stupid. Like, I went into a room, there's, like, 8 guys in there, and I had to sleep. I slept under the desk. I just, like, curled up under the desk, like, with my bag as my pillow, and then I just slept there. And I woke up, like, 4 hours later. I went and got some breakfast and then went back to trading. And the reason, like, here's a little tip for any of you guys who are new to this hotel room Magic player situation. You never want to sleep out in the walking path, all right? Magic players are huge, and they need to use the restroom in the middle of the night. And what's going to happen if you're in the walking path, you're going to get stepped on, man. It's not going to feel good. So always, always sleep in the tub, sleep under the desk, but do not sleep in the walking path. Not a good idea.
That's crazy.
It's just like, yeah, I don't have a place to stay. So we'll figure it out, though. I have badges.
That's awesome.
I mean, I'm getting in. I'm in. Like, I'm going, man.
Yeah, you will be there.
I will be there.
You may be sleeping on your feet, but you are going to be there.
Yeah, or not sleeping.
Sure, that is
wow. That'd be a sick journey. Not sleeping and just pure trading.
I mean, that's pretty much what I do. Like, I'll grab a couple hours here and there, but, like, I don't need those couple hours. I guess I can just go to Steak and Shake.
Yeah.
Get a coffee, chill out, and then go back to it.
That's intense.
Like, you have no idea. Like, until you see me at Gen Con, like, seriously, I don't move for, like, hours. Like, 14 hours at a time sometimes. Like, I'll just be sitting there trading the whole time, the whole day. Sometimes my friends will bring me, like, sandwiches or something. So it's pretty crazy. It's, like, a really profitable trade experience, so.
Mark's son going to be there?
Oh, yeah. He's always there, man. I haven't talked to Mark's son in ages, man. He's been real busy playing, like, League of Legends or something.
Yeah. He's left Magic behind.
Yeah. All together?
Well, it seems like it. So, I mean, he just got fed up at one point, but I don't know.
But he's been doing much better every time he plays, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I think we're all getting better. Like, not me, obviously. I don't even play Magic. But, yeah, I think, like, everyone in this class, you know? Everyone who's been around, like, the same time, amount of time, I think we're all getting a little bit better. I think Scotty's getting better. I think KYT's definitely getting better. You know? Yeah.
It's good to see.
We're coming up, man. Pretty soon, people are going to be talking about us in the Pro Tour Hall of Fame.
150 points is a fuck ton
of
points.
That's a fuck ton, yeah.
Put this in perspective. What do you get for going to one Pro Tour? How many points do you get?
Like four or three?
Can you get more points by top 80?
Yeah, a lot. I don't know the actual scale.
How much? Just guess.
20?
Okay, so like 150 points, you basically have to top 8 like... like 7 Pro Tours, right?
Or something retarded. Yeah.
Okay, that's not hard.
That's not hard. Sure.
So I have 5, so...
can it really be that hard to top 8 like 7 Pro Tours?
I think it's not hard if you... Well, not Pro Tours, but like if you get... You know, if you hit platinum and you get invited to all that stuff and you even get pro points just for attending like the Players Championship and World Magic Cup if you queue for those. So just by queuing for them alone will get you a lot of points over the year. And like a cashier there and, you know, maybe you can get more than a dozen points. You're supposed to get more than a dozen points if you want to hit, you know, over silver and gold and platinum. So, like, yeah, guys, like, I don't know how many points Alex has, but he has a good amount already just from queuing for everything so far. So it's just a matter of qualifying and just chaining qualifications.
I think if you're living that lifestyle where you've become good enough to top 8 one Pro Tour or to get in and top 8,
yeah,
I think you got to be able to do the rest of them, right? Like, you just... Like, just practice, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
variance be damned, right?
Like, I mean, yeah, okay, there's variance, but, like, these dudes play at a lot of freaking Pro Tours, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you gotta, like, variance can't get you every time, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder about these guys. Do they really practice really hard, or do they just, like, oh, I'm a pro, I'm awesome, I don't need to practice, we'll do a measly, like, 20 hours, like, when we get to the site or something. Like, that doesn't seem like, you know what I mean? Like, if I was a pro, I'd be, like, playing all the freaking time, man. I'd be grinding. That's how I'm at the trade tables. Just grind, hours.
You probably make more money than them by a mile, I would think.
Oh, I probably do. I mean... I'm a small shop, like, with not a lot of stuff to speak of, and I have 3 employees that work for me, and they get paid every week, you know?
Wow.
Like, and so...
What a baller!
So I'm definitely, you know, probably pulling in more than a pro player, I would assume. But I don't see that money. that money's not mine. That's my employees. You know, they get that money.
Yeah. Comes in and pays them.
Yeah, it comes in and pays them. A little bit sits in the bank account here and there, you know. Bank account, like, grows incrementally a little bit, you know.
Then you go and do something dumb like buy a beta set. Just that's
do,
enough.
Sometimes you got to do shit, you know. You got to make moves, man. You got to make moves.
I like it. You know who made a really hot move that I got to give a shout out to?
Who?
Justin Reardon.
Reardon.
Who's Justin Reardon, you might ask? Justin Reardon placed 8th in the PTQ that happened at the end of June in Ottawa, Ontario, with a list that is decidedly 4 cards away from the list that I was running on my stream that week. Pretty awesome. So I don't know whether he was watching my stream or not. I don't know if he's a fan of the show or not, but I can tell you that it's literally 4 cards off of my list at the time, and one of those is a land. So good for him. It's awesome.
And give credit where credit's due, Mr. Reardon.
I'm giving credit where credit is due. Thank you very much for... If you indeed watch the stream and read the articles, thank you very much. That's good. That's awesome. That makes me smile a little.
Yeah, man, I gotta write some articles. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
I wonder if I could still do it. I got this great idea for a column. I'm gonna call it Captain's Log. What do you think, KYP?
You fucker.
Oh man.
You could call it Captain's Log Supplemental.
I'll call it Captain's Log and then I'll go scrub out of infinite PTQs.
Oh fuck.
So many daggers today.
Oh man.
Eventually I'll get there, hopefully.
Oh, you will.
It's just such a grind.
It is.
There's like over 100 people, you know, that only one person is going to go away with what they... Like, I come away with a box of Dragon's Maze with a... I don't care, so...
He's like, I don't care, I'm a baller. I don't need a box of Dragon's Maze. I want a blue envelope.
So I'm trying to... Like, I struggle with high-pressure situations. Uh-huh. So this week... Just to quickly mention, I played Sealed, Dragon's Maze Sealed, with 3 of my friends. We decided to just like crack open 6 packs. And usually when we draft, everyone likes to backdraft, like winner takes like the first best rare, the second best player takes the second one, and then you like snake it. And everyone seems to like that system, especially like my local store, because like everyone wants to go home with something. But for this seal with my 3 friends, we decided winner takes like every single rare, and I didn't even need the card, so it's just like, you know, why are we just like picking one or picking the top rare and just dividing the rares like that? So and it made it feel like a lot more was on the line as we were playing, and I ended up taking it down, so that was pretty sweet.
Good.
So you're trying to like buff up your high pressure situation threshold.
Right. So we were playing, like, me and this other guy we both had the same record, so it came down to our match, and like loser gets nothing, winner gets all the rares, and there were a few dual lands in there, and Angels of Serenity. There was like some good money, so I do want to put myself in those situations, not in drafts where, oh, if you get third, you still get like a decent rare. Where I feel like I do badly, and I've talked about this and written about this. It's just like the pressure does tend to get to me. So maybe this is something that will help, and we'll see.
Good. You should go to like an occupational hypnotherapist. Yeah, because like the guy in the movie Office Space was totally wound up, and then he wasn't anymore.
Mm.
You should go and do that.
Something I'll definitely consider that.
So listen.
Wait a second. Before we jump off that, is there any tips you have for him to manage this high pressure situation?
Aside from being a complete sociopath, no.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like,
you like, what gets to you, KYT? When you're in a high pressure situation, why do you function badly?
I mean, I guess I get nervous, or
what do you get nervous about?
Do you start to second guess yourself?
Maybe I could be just overreacting that I'm just losing all these top 8s. or these key, like, I'm just never getting over that hump where I'm having that, like, key finish. So, but I have mentioned that I do get, like, intimidated by pro players. That's one thing I know for a fact that does happen. I tend to second-guess myself a lot more in those situations.
Yeah.
In key must-win scenarios, I think, like, someone mentioned, one of my friends, Mexi, said he felt like I tend to not mulligan as much in that. That's what he feels is a weakness of mine. I don't mulligan as much in those make it or break it matches. So that's something I'll have to really take a look at.
I think that's right, because a lot of times you talk about when you lost in the like crucial match, you're always like, I kept a shaky seven, or I kept a, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I think you do that because you want to have the most opportunity to win.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to, like, handicap yourself in a situation that you already feel like you're handicapped, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But by keeping a shitty seven, you're already handicapping yourself, you know?
Yeah.
I think, yeah, like, one of the things I'm dealing with this a little bit with some of the people who work with me. Like, there's a lot of there's a lot of tasks that you have to do, a lot of things that you have to manage, you know, and it all comes at once. So sometimes they get overwhelmed, or they feel very pressured, you know, and then they don't know what to do. So they kind of freeze up, or they make the wrong decision. And this is like in work mode, you know what I mean? And what I always tell them is my favorite saying is, how do you eat an elephant? And whenever I say this for the first time, they're always like, what? They look at me like, how do you eat it? Why would you eat an elephant? You know, I'm like, how do you eat an elephant? And they're like, I don't know. And I'm like, one bite at a time. So you have to like, you have to focus on one thing at a time. Right. And as you process through those things, as you process through, you know, your options, you got to look at one option at a time. You know, you can't like freak out about all the options you have and then be like, oh no, we're pressured. What are we going to do? Let's just do this. This is the thing on top of my mind. Let's just do this one, you know? So if you analyze each option one at a time, then you probably come up with the best solution, you know?
One game at a time. Like, don't think about game two, game three.
One play at a time, you know?
I mean, like, you gotta, in theory, but you gotta get a little bit further than that, but. You know, not more than three.
Well, if you're thinking too far ahead, like you're not gonna, you know, you're gonna be too farsighted. You know, you have to examine like the very, like what you're doing at the moment. You know,
mm-hmm. I agree. I'm just saying you can't put your blinders on towards anything other than that. That's all.
But when you're analyzing that play, then you got to think about, well, how is this play going to play out? You know, how is this going to what's going to happen like three steps down the road if I like kill this dude with this Mizzium Mortars, like, and I won't be overload it. Like, is that going to cost me the game, you know, or like something to that effect, you know?
I agree with that completely. Yep.
Well, thanks, guys. I'll keep that in mind.
We have faith in you. Just play each game of Magic and then stop losing. It's really easy.
Yeah, that's what Scott likes to text me. And just stop losing. Like, fuck, I'm trying.
You need to practice more, bro. You're like these pros who think they got it down. You know, you're just like, I'm going to do all right at this PTQ. Do you guys have a deck for me? It's like 2 days before the PTQ. What? You don't have a deck yet? You haven't been practicing? Of course you're going to fail, bro.
It's sheer force of will. Like, you just have to decide to stop losing. That's but really all it is.
Don't run force of will. It's not legal and standard.
Yeah. But just decide to stop losing. You'll be amazed how much that'll help.
Yeah, I'll keep that in mind.
I'll keep that in mind basically means you guys are full of shit.
So there is something interesting that just kind of came across the interwebs.
What's that?
Apparently Elspeth is back in Theros.
What?
I linked you in the show notes. There is some Spanish artwork, like the insert cards, like from M14. And actually,
I can't imagine.
Do I have that card?
Man, I gotta freaking sleep, man. What time is it?
Yeah, it's almost 12:30. Okay. I think it's gotta be the other one, right? Because Modern Masters reprinted. Well, I can't assume everything, but
yeah, it might be. Well, no, Modern Masters was only printed in English. So, anyways, it's interesting.
She
could be back. That could be sick.
I mean, that's her, right?
Very clearly.
So, like, why would they put her on MTG Theros and, like, not have her in the set?
So
it's got to be the other one, or a new one.
I think it's going to be a new one, yeah. It's
going to
be a new one.
Elf is sexy, man. Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring back Progenitus, too, so Garrett can be awesome.
Oh, gosh. We'll all eat our words. Hey, did we already talk about how good Chandra is? We talked about that. We talked about that, if she's better than Jace. Yeah, that's right. I got my head in like ladies planeswalkers right now. That's where I'm at.
So I guess let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
All right.
Kaka,
see you guys later.
Peace, bitches.
We're going to bed. All right, we're getting some sleep.
Bye, guys. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, that was a lame, like, outro.